Hey, and welcome to the Humanity Church Podcast. So excited that you're here. We hope that you enjoy this week's talk and it really connects to your life in a meaningful way. If you're live in the Pomona area, we would love to have you at one of our gatherings at 10 a.m. or at one of our Humanity groups that meet all throughout the week, all over the city. If you want more information about our community, you can go to www.humanitychurch.com or download our app on your phone on Apple or Android. If you like what you're hearing here and want to continue to support the ongoing work at Humanity, you can text the word Humanity Church, one word, to 77977 and give back financially in just about 10 seconds. Hey, and here's this week's talk that was given live at our Sunday gathering at Humanity Church.
Hey, good morning, Humanity Church. Hope that you're doing well. My name is Nathan Naber. I'm our lead pastor here today, and excited to be with you guys again. You know, sometimes I sneak away into our mother's room during the gathering because there's not mothers here right now. And, well, there are mothers, just not babies. So, just to get to watch online and to get that experience, and I was just flipping back and forth between Facebook and YouTube and our app and the different platforms that we have, and just seeing all of your comments and who's on and who's connecting. I just want to say thank you for those of you who have stayed faithful through this season. I know it's hard. I know there's all kinds of like, oh, do I need to get online again? Is there a thing? I'll just catch it on Tuesday for the replay. And I just want to say thank you for those of you who have stuck in and said, hey, this is important. This matters. I believe that God is shaping things and putting puzzle pieces together in so many areas of life, and that when we come back, we're going to be stronger for it. So I had so much gratitude for those of you who are online and tuning in and joining us this morning. So let's pause and let's pray as we jump in. Jesus, I thank you for who you are, your steadfastness, for your unwavering commitment to us, to loving, to being generous with your life and your spirit. I thank you for the hope that you bring that's only available in you in the midst of hopelessness and darkness and chaos, that you are such a steady, stable foundation. I pray that you would make that just clear to us today. And as we step into our week, we're so grateful. We thank you. In Jesus' name, amen. Amen. One of my favorite Pixar movies is Inside Out. And if you've never seen it, it's a movie about a young girl named Riley who has all these emotions in her head that essentially control everything that she does: joy, sadness, anger, disgust, fear. And it's interesting because I think so many people relate to the film as adults because it feels so true to real life. There are so many emotions that feel like they control us. When you think about love, it's hilarious to watch teenagers fall in love, or really what we should probably say, fall into infatuation. But when they fall in love and the crazy things that they do in the midst of discovering that love, or when people first start dating and how they become absolutely ridiculous. I love the dating voice that guys get when they're on the phone and all of a sudden we're just like hanging out and all of a sudden they're like, hey baby, how's it going? It just causes us to do dumb things at times, or we feel at times like anger overtakes us and we use phrases like I'm burning with anger, and there are moments where sorrow comes and we describe like it comes like waves over us and it overtakes us. But there's an emotion I feel that lives at a constant in some level within us, and then when it ramps its head up to an awareness level, it seems like it takes us over, and that sensation is fear. Fear is such a common experience that all of us have as human beings at various levels in life. And it feels at times like it's just a permanent presence. That we may not always feel afraid or live in that space, but I think if we all paused, we could say, hey, think of something you're afraid of, and there would be this underlying sensation. It's like a shadow that follows you. And you can shake others off. You can find yourself falling, quote unquote, in and out of love. You can find yourself releasing anger. You can even find yourself moving out of sorrow. But there's something about fear that just feels like a constant at times under the surface. And if we want to, we can tap into it like that. Allow it to rise to the surface and allow it to be the dominant voice that moves us and guides us. I mean, if you're watching online, just in the comment section, I'd love to just hear from some of you, what are some of the things that you're afraid of? Like, just maybe some of the phobias, some of the things that you're like, yeah, this is what I live in fear of. I have grown up a fearful person, and I've grown in this area leaps and bounds. But as a kid, I was the kid that was constantly afraid. In fact, I would not only have to sleep with the lights on until I was about 20 years old, but I would not only just sleep with the lights on, but I would sleep in the hallway so that I could see my parents' bedroom just in case something got into my room and I couldn't get out. You know, like a velociraptor or something like that. And so I even slept in fear as a kid. I remember the first time I ever went on the Haunted Mansion at Disneyland. I got through the entrance, the elevator part, if you know what I'm talking about. And then when it time to get actually on the ride, I was so afraid that I was shaking and screaming. I blocked this out from my memory. My parents remind me constantly of this. But they literally had to stop the ride, turn all the lights on, and get me out through a special exit, ruining the whole experience for all the other guests because I was dead set on not stepping into that. My childhood was watching my dad and my sister go on roller coasters while I sat back saying, they're absolutely crazy for even thinking about stepping in on that. I mean, I didn't go on my first roller coaster until I was a junior in high school. And I think it was like the gold mine train at Six Flags or something like that. I was just so afraid constantly. And fear, you know, rises up still to this day. This building that we have in is beautiful. And let me just tell you, at night, it's probably the creepiest place I could ever imagine being in. I just keep thinking, someone could make money filming like a horror story here. And last Thursday night, I was here all by myself, up in the booth, working on some things on our computer that had crashed the weekend before. And it was amazing how when you're in a creepy old environment all by yourself, how every noise suddenly becomes significant. Like there would be a creak and I'd be like, who's here, right? Or there would be like some weird noise outside. And I'm like, someone's trying to get in, right? And I remember even as I was leaving on Tuesday night, like I got done with the computer and I'm thinking to myself, okay, I have to make it all the way down the stairs and all the way down the hallway and out the door and turn off the lights while I'm in this building. So I'm like, I pull out my phone, I turn music on really loud. I'm literally, as I'm walking down the stairs, I'm like, I'm in the building, I'm here, and I'm a big dude. Right? Because I was horrified. I'm like, something is going to get me, right? There is a possibility for something horrible happen. And of course, there are things that we have phobias of, like the dark or snakes or zombies or the apocalypse or roller coasters. But there are seasons of life where fear just overtakes us when it becomes intimately connected to our lives. And I don't know if I've ever been in a season of my life where people constantly are sharing the fears that they are living in. Not like a phobia for a moment of the dark, or not like a phobia for a moment of roller coasters, but like this is a constant state that I find myself in. And what we have and we don't have often fuels that fear in the moment right now. There's this fear of what could be, and there's this fear about what is currently taking place that fuels this internal conversation that moves us to be controlled and manipulated by fear. It's what we long for, and then we feel like we're never going to realize that motivates us in this space. And fear seems to be everywhere these days. And whether it's a legit fear of our own physical health, or whether it's a fear of losing our job, or whether it's a fear of not having the future that we long for, or whether it's a fear of this being the new normal. And it's everywhere. It's in finances, it's in politics, it's in the culture, it's everywhere. And it seems to be so pervasive in our life. And in the scriptures, even when God shows up, over and over and over again, when the Spirit of God shows up, when angels show up, when a messenger from God show up, the natural human response is actually fear. And oftentimes, God's messengers in the scripture are like, get up, do not be afraid, do not be afraid. I can't tell you how many times God or one of his messengers show up on the scene and the first words out of their mouth are like, don't be afraid. Because God understands that we are so prone to fear that when even the God of love, who is supposed to cast out all fear, shows up, our natural instinct is absolute terror. In fact, for some of you, even the thought of God connecting to your life feels like a horrifying event. People, even when they talk about coming into church who have never connected to the movement of Jesus, are often like, yeah, I am afraid because I might be struck by lightning, or someone's going to judge me, or God's going to hate me, or God would never accept me for where I'm at. And there's this constant even narrative around connecting to God that says, do not be afraid. So how did we get to this place as a people? And how do we move from that? There's a passage in the scriptures in Joshua where the Israelites are literally about to take the promised land. They're about to step into the future that God had promised them. And this is what takes place in Joshua chapter 1, starting in verse 9. Follow along with me. It says this, after the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord said to Joshua, son of Nun, Moses' aides, Moses, my servant, is dead. Now then, you and all these people get ready to cross the Jordan into the land, and I am about to give them to the Israelites. I will give you every place where you set your foot, as I promised Moses. Your territory will extend from the desert to Lebanon, and from the great river, the Euphrates, all the Hittite country to the Mediterranean Sea in the west. No one will be able to stand against you all the days of your life. As I was with Moses, so I will be with you. I will never leave you nor forsake you. Be strong and courageous, because you will lead these people to inherit the land I swore their ancestors to give them. Be strong and very courageous. Be careful to obey all the laws my servant Moses gave to you. Do not turn to it from the right or to the left, that you may be successful wherever you go. Keep this book of the law always on your lips. Meditate on it day and night so that you may be careful to do everything written in it. Then you will be prosperous and successful. Have I not commanded you? Be strong and courageous. Do not be terrified. Do not be discouraged. For the Lord your God will be with you wherever you go. So Joshua ordered the officers of the people, go through the camp and tell the people, get your provisions ready. 3 days from now, you will cross the Jordan here. Go in and take possession of the land the Lord your God has given you for your own. This is like the quintessential passage on what it looks like to live a courageous life, void of fear. And it's interesting here because it starts out what I would say is like a Harry Potter entrance, which is basically like, Moses is dead, right? What a way to tell a story, right? To start a story. Up until now, Moses has been the key figure. In fact, if you talk about the Israelites stepping into the promised land, journeying to the promised land, getting out from slavery and stepping into their new future, Moses is the dude. He is the guy that everyone knows is connected to getting the Israelites to the promised land. And yet, right before they get there, he dies. And this is the way the conversation starts off. That Moses is dead. Now, Moses had gotten Israel to a point, but now it's Joshua's turn. Now Joshua is up. He gets to take over where Moses left off, and he gets to finish the mission that's in front of them. And Joshua had been number two for a long time. He and Aaron had been serving Moses and backing him up and walking along with him and being in this. He had fought with Moses. He had led with Moses. He had spoken with Moses and for Moses. And now he gets the number one spot, and he gets to step into this without Moses, all by himself. Essentially, it's like, you're it. You're up. You're on. Ever been there before? Where suddenly you've been like the number two, you've been the one following, or you've been on the team, and then all of a sudden it's like, this is your moment. See, there is always a time in life when your mission becomes your mission and no one else's. When what you're called to will be the mission that you are called to. See, because up until this point, someone else was available to take the hit. Someone else was available to lead the charge. Someone else was available to say, here's where we're headed. Let's take the land. Let's go here. Let's move in this direction. But the person up front always takes the hit. And it's interesting, as you go through your seasons of life, you can notice how those who are in front of you, who are leading your mission, start to fall away, right? I mean, as we start off life, of course, we have parents, and they're the ones that take the hit. If you're a parent, you know that very well now, that you're the ones who struggle. You're the ones who fight. You're the ones who are leading the charge as your kids step into their full potential. And so parents are there. And then we go to school, and of course, there's an added protection of teachers, and they're leading us and guiding us and moving with us, and mentors that are in that space. And then, of course, we leave home, and then parents are no longer there. And our elementary school, junior high school teachers are no longer there. But we do have like professors now if you go to college. And finally, and now suddenly there's this new layer of a front, of a protection of those who take the hit first. But there's some freedom that comes with us. And that's why I think those college years, those career building years are so exciting, because it's like, hey, I'm not quite the person yet, but I don't have all these people in front of me. So I get a good amount of freedom to do what I want to do, but I always have a fallback. Right? I mean, when you're 22 and you're like, man, I lost my job, I'm out of college, let me go back to mom. It's not weird, right? It's not like a bizarre thing. There's always a fallback that you can go to. Then when you get a job, of course, there's a boss. And there's always like, well, hey, the boss is in charge. I don't really know. You can always blame ignorance or you can always blame bad leadership or whatnot. But isn't it interesting when you get to those spaces in your life when you're like, whoa, there's no one else here. I'm it. There's no one else to blame. There's no one else to pass the buck to. There's no one else that I can say, oh yeah, it was their fault, or I need their support, or I need their help moving into this place. They find themselves there. Let me just tell you this. As your pastor, I will tell you this. I'm the first to take the hit. And that's what I signed up for. And not that I don't have community or people around me to support me. That's the beautiful thing about humanity here is we do things together. But I will tell you that at the end of the day, I am responsible for moving the mission and vision forward. There is no one else that's at the helm. And there are times where I look around and I'm like, anyone else? Anyone else for this? And it's it. Now, that doesn't mean you don't have community or support or people backing you up or with you in it. But there is a time where you must own the mission that is in front of you. And Joshua finds himself there. But the interesting thing about Joshua is he didn't choose the role. This wasn't like a spiritual moment where God comes to Joshua and says, Joshua, you have been faithful. Of all the men and women here, I choose you. Now, this role is literally thrust upon him. This mission is literally pushed into his lap. I mean, the entrance to this is basically, Moses is dead, you're up. There's no like other people get these beautiful spiritual moments. Like Saul is anointed for king. David's brought before all of his brothers. And we're like, we want the young one. God has anointed you. Others are chosen out of everyone else. And there's these deep spiritual moments. Joshua gets the job because someone died. And that is his qualification for stepping into this moment. See, I guarantee you that in your life, you will have moments that are thrust upon you that you will feel unprepared for. That you will feel like, I am not ready for this. This is not my moment. I need someone else. Someone else can be the Moses for just a little bit while I prepare myself to get into this role. But guess what? You will never, ever, ever be prepared for the moments where you're up. It's always interesting when people say, you know, I'm just waiting to become a parent until I'm ready. That is just a role, let me just tell you, that gets thrust upon you. And no matter how much you plan, no matter how much you read, those moments are thrust upon you. And guess what? You get to decide what you do in those moments. When the leadership is handed over to you, when your mission is handed over to you, when your life is being handed over to you. See, so many times we rely, we have this dependency on others, like mom, dad, husband, kids, boss, church. And there's a difference between a connectedness, a community, an interdependency, and a dependency on others. Like using others as an excuse, or using others as a backup, or using others as a door out for the mission that they have in front of you. They have been whom you have been following up until now, but there comes a time when your moment is here and you get to choose to stand or back down. That you get to choose. This is how I am leading my finances. This is how I am going to choose to be in my marriage. This is how I'm going to choose to engage my spiritual journey. This is how I'm going to choose to be as a parent. This is how I'm going to choose to be in my career. And you're up and Moses isn't here anymore. There's no one else that you can blame or give credit for the breakdown or the beauty that takes place in life. See, it's amazing that some of you have actually grown up and moved out of your house, but you haven't moved into your life yet. You actually haven't moved fully into the life and taken responsibility for everything that is in front of you to own the purpose and the mission that God has placed before you. You're still looking for someone else to do what you're unwilling to do. I can tell you how many people come to the church throughout the years to me, and they're like, hey, this thing's really important. I'm like, yeah, it sounds really important. Sounds like a great thing. And they're always like, great, when are you gonna do it? And I'm like, hey, it sounds like an awesome thing. I have the same question for you. Why don't you get in it and then come back to us and let us know how we can support you? I can't tell you how many times along the journey that's been something where things get dropped or put to the side because people actually at the end of the day weren't that excited about it. They were excited about someone else doing it, not them owning the mission that God had placed inside of them. See, some of us are still looking for someone else to do what we're unwilling to do that God is calling us into.
But I love that when Joshua is handed this role and he accepts it and he says, I'm in. There's no one else. Moses is dead. I'm in this role. I love that God gives him this promise and he says that every place you put your foot, I will give you. He says, everywhere you go, I will hand it over to you. See, that seems awesome. I don't know about you, but when I read through the scriptures, I'm like, sign me up for that part. Sign me up for the part where God's like, you put your foot here, it's yours. You put your foot there, it's yours. You want that over there? Go put your foot there, right? And he's just like, anything you put your foot to, I will hand over you. We love that part, but it's the first part that we oftentimes bristle against that we're not up for. See, this is why being in connection, in conversation, in communion with God is absolutely critical if you are going to step into the fullness, the fearless life that you were called to live. Because Jesus, following Jesus, is not like attending a Tony Robbins seminar. I promise you. I know sometimes people describe church like that. Oftentimes people who have never been in church are kind of like, they come through a gathering and they're like, you're like a motivational speaker. And I'm like, glad you feel motivated. Definitely not that though. Because here's the thing. Jesus's primary message to you is not, hey, go live your dreams. That's actually not his primary message to you. There is absolutely an aspect of this that says, live your dreams. But see, here's the thing. Some of you are actually pursuing your dreams and you're asking Jesus to simply being a wingman to the dreams that you have. You're like, hey, Jesus, here's my plans. Here's my grandiose future that I have designed for myself. Now, what I need for you is all the power. So this is where I want to go. So I'm gonna put my foot here, remember, right here. Could you hand me this? I want the job, remember, I want this job. And I want this much money and I want my kids to do this. Or I want my kids to not do this. I'm putting my foot down, Jesus. You're said, you would give me everything. And we oftentimes think of Jesus like a State Farm insurance. You know, we're just like a good neighbor, Jesus is there. And he shows up and he fixes all the things. And oftentimes these passages are taken completely out of context, saying, wherever you put your foot, Jesus will give it to you. See, but what God actually calls us into is a deep, passionate pursuit of him. See, this is all in the context of God's people following God into the promised land that he had already declared was available for them. That they were in the passionate pursuit of who God was. And that's what Joshua was in. He was just like, look, I'm up for whatever. If I need to wander through the desert for 40 years to get to where I'm going, this is what we're up to. But I will not fall away from where you are going. And here's the thing. As you follow God, as you allow Jesus's voice to shape who you are and the things you care about and the things you long for, from that will emerge a new vision and a new passion that comes from his heart. That there will be a new future that he calls you into as you pursue him that seems so much more beautiful and exciting and powerful than what you were following before. And here's the thing. I oftentimes think to myself, and I hear this in other people's conversations, like, well, why should I give up my dreams to follow his? This seems like an unfair exchange. See, here's the thing. Oftentimes, we have this idea that like when we connect to Jesus, he connects to us and starts informing us of the life he calls for us. But really, what we imagine that being is him cramping our style. Like we're like, hey, I got this future thing, and I'm willing to follow you, and you want me to do what? Like that doesn't jive with what I've already decided is true for my life. That doesn't jive with what I've already decided is where I'm headed. See, we oftentimes think that when we step into a relationship with Jesus, he's interested in cramping, limiting, diminishing the possibilities that are available for us in light of the future that we have for ourselves. But here's the thing, is that when you connect to God, when you start in communion with him, when you allow him to inform your future, he is always in the business of expanding what's possible and expanding your future and expanding what he has for you in the middle of that. See, he is interested in actually leading you to a place where you are thriving that is promised. See, God is not interested in suffocating us. It's actually quite the opposite. We are oftentimes suffocating the big dreams that God has for us, that he's calling us into. It's never us that are gasping for air, trying to get to the future that he has for us. It's almost always God saying, would you just give me some room to work? Because if you would do that, you're going to be amazed at what's in front of you. See, when you are clear about the mission from heaven that is on your life and the purpose that he has called you into to direct your feet, you'll know it because everywhere you set your foot, it will be given. See, that's the beautiful thing, is that when you're actually clear, this is where God is calling me into, this is the future that God has for me, this is the purpose, this is my mission. That is not Moses's, that it's not anyone else's, it's not Aaron's, it's not Miriam's, it's mine. When you're clear on that, and when you're willing to step into that space, you will know it because your feet will start to take new ground that you never imagined could be yours before. There is no forcing it. There's no need to manipulate it to be. There's no like, hey, I gotta put together this 5-year plan to manipulate it into be. You will just simply advance into the future that you are called to, and every place that you put your foot will be yours because God has already ordained it. Now, this doesn't mean you won't struggle. This doesn't mean everything's gonna be a piece of cake. It doesn't mean you're just gonna be walking easy through life. But what it does mean is that when you put your foot down, even when it seems like all hope is lost, that he's like, hey, just wait a second, I got it. Because I promised you that every place you put your foot, I will be with you. Even in the moments that feel like, God, you called me here. You were the one who said that this was my future. You were the one that said this was the place. You were the one that said this is what I was supposed to step into. And everything feels like it's not going to turn out. Hold on, because his promises remain true that every place you put your foot will be yours. So it shouldn't be a shock that even in the breakdown, God steps in and says, yeah, I'm going to make this new. I'm going to transform this into something beautiful. I think we have this myth that if it's from God, it has to be hard. That if it's from God, it has to be this constant struggle, this working out of all of our issues to get to where we're at. And what you see in the scriptures over and over again is, yes, there are trials, and yes, there are tests, and yes, there are giants to overcome, and there are lands to take, but at the end of the day, everywhere you put your foot, it is yours. See, God never, ever takes something away from you with the intention of not giving you back something greater. This is why it's so hard for me to talk about giving in a way that actually communicates the heart of God. Because I know so many churches and so many religious organizations have just used it for their own personal gain. And there are churches that have way more money than they need and they just waste it on junk and all kinds of things. So I get that there's a category, that there's already a cultural narrative around giving in the context of the church. But here's the thing, is that even when God calls you to give up your resources, he's never saying, great, now have fun. Sorry, you're poor now. That's never the case. It is almost always the case that he says, "What? Now that you have sown into the kingdom with your resources, now that you have sown into the kingdom with your time, now that you have sown into the kingdom with your energy, with your family, with your life, your heart, soul, mind, and strength, now there's space to give back because I know that you're in. I know that you're willing to sacrifice to have this mission turn out." And God says one thing to Joshua over and over and over and over in this passage. Now Joshua had seen miracle after miracle after miracle after miracle after miracle. In fact, the entire Exodus is basically one giant miracle. I mean, talk about like walking through the wilderness and having food rain down on you every day, right? Moses like tapping on rocks and water coming out of it. Them being rescued over and over, being led at night by a pillar of fire and being led a day by this giant cloud, having God's presence show up with Moses over and over and over again. You think by now you'd be like, oh yeah, God's got this. Wouldn't it be nice if that those moments where our faith in God is so strong, wouldn't it be nice if those moments actually lasted? Or if the reality and the understanding that God is actually faithful lasted? Isn't it amazing how quickly we get over that? Isn't it amazing how one moment we're like, God's so amazing, he's faithful, he's done everything. I put my foot down, he gave me that. I put my foot down, he gave me that. And the next moment we're like, God, the next step, you're not here, where are you? You've never been there for me. And it's interesting that Joshua, in this moment, God wasn't just like, hey, Joshua, I need you to take that land, go for it. He knew that Joshua, like all of us, forgot. That Joshua had forgotten. And he tells him over and over and over again, be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid.
Be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid. Be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid. See, because just like Joshua, we've seen over and over and over again God's faithfulness to us, and we forget. And so our natural response is to go back to fear, because it is such a common response to us, to the purpose that God has for us. And here's the thing, is that when God steps in and reveals his mission for us, when God steps in and says, hey, here's the future that I have for you, our knee-jerk response is often paralyzing fear. It's almost always paralyzing fear. And see, I think that's why God had to tell Joshua at least 3 times in 9 verses, be strong and courageous. Every single time that God has shown up in my life and said, here's the next season. Because God, unfortunately, or maybe fortunately, doesn't just reveal the whole path. Oftentimes he's like, here's the first step, do this. Here's the second step, step into this place. And every single time God has unlocked the next level, if you will, it is always an immediate sense of paralyzing fear. Because when I look at it, and when we look at the future that God has for us, it is always impossible for us to accomplish it by ourselves. And to be honest, it's almost always impossible to simply accomplish it with more people. We think that if we just had more people, if we just had more money, if we just had a different boss, if my kids could get their act together, then I could totally accomplish what God was doing. But the fact of the matter is, if everything was working perfectly, there would still be paralyzing fear. Because God never calls us into a small future. He always calls us into a future that's much bigger than what we could ever even ask or imagine. And so the response will almost always be fear. But I love that in Joshua 1:9, he stops God in this monologue to him. And he says, Joshua, have I not commanded you to be strong and courageous? God actually commands Joshua to be courageous in the face of fear. See, I don't know about you, but when I think about courage, I think of it a lot like I think about fear, and that it's a feeling. That it's suddenly a feeling that comes on me, or that it's something that comes along with circumstances that I find myself in. So there are moments where, yes, I feel courageous. You could probably look back on your life and go, man, there are moments where I felt so courageous and I did that crazy thing and I have no idea how I did that, but I did that because I felt courageous in the moment. Or suddenly the circumstances align. Suddenly, like, you have some finances in your bank account, so you're willing to take some risks. Or suddenly, like, the relationships aren't falling apart, so you're willing to have some deep conversations. Suddenly, things are falling into place, so you're willing to step out and risk in those moments. So oftentimes, it's either the result of a feeling or the result of a circumstance that happens around us. And we oftentimes think, well, now I have money, so I can be courageous. Well, now I have resources, so I can be courageous. Now I have kids that are doing what they're supposed to do, so I'm gonna be courageous. Now I have a marriage that feels like it's working, so I can be courageous. Now I have a church that's supposed to be doing what they're doing, so now I can be courageous. But here, God actually says, no. Courage has nothing to do with your feelings. It actually has nothing to do with your circumstances. You're just commanded to be courageous. See, because I don't know about you, but when you're afraid, does it feel like a choice? It doesn't to me. It never, ever feels like a choice. In fact, it feels like the exact opposite. It feels like it has overtaken me and I do not have a choice to get out of it. It's just there. It lives in me and all over me. See, if I had a choice, I wouldn't choose fear. Likewise, if I had a choice, I would choose courage. And yet God here is saying, no. You're commanded. You're commanded to be courageous. And he says, do not be afraid. Now, I don't know about you. If I was Joshua, I'd be like, yeah, easier said than done. Thank you, right? If we could just bottle that, put it in a pill form, I'd be a millionaire, right? Just like the do not be afraid. How many of you found yourself there where you're just like, don't be afraid, don't be afraid, don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. That would be amazing if that could actually happen. Now, there are moments where fear is healthy. Like if you're being chased by a bear, please be afraid, right?
If your life is in danger, if someone pulls a gun on you, please be afraid. If you're like in the middle of an earthquake that is terrifying, please be afraid in those moments. Fear is a tool in those moments. But for most of us, and in most circumstances, the fear that overtakes us is like the fear I had on Tuesday night in this building. That I start imagining all of the possibilities that were coming. I knew I was going to survive. Like if you were to ask me in that moment of screaming, I'm here and I'm a big dude running down the stairs. Had you asked me in that moment, Nathan, will you survive exiting this building? My answer would have been yes. And yet my body was saying something completely different. There was never a question as to whether or not I would exit this building alive. Never a moment where I thought this isn't going to happen. But strangely enough, my body, my heart, my mind all responds with, I need to preserve myself. I need to keep myself safe because I am afraid in this moment. And we find ourselves there all the time. See, because so often our heart and our mind don't actually know when we're actually in survival and we're actually unsafe. And when we aren't. And our culture today especially has lost the ability to know when we're actually unsafe and when we are actually not going to die in any circumstance that we find ourselves in. See, the problem with fear is that it is constantly lying to us about the future. I mean, the fact of the matter is that almost every single fear is connected to the future. It's connected to what's going to happen next. It's connected to what is the next move that I need to make, or what is the next move that they're going to make, or what is the future that's coming for me and my children and my family and our culture and the church and this and that. Even in this epidemic that we've just been living in guessing games of what's next and living in fear. Now we can look at science and we can say, here's the science that we have right now, but even science has been shifting by the moment. And even with that, there's like, well, I guess this is what's next. I guess this is what's required. And so there's a time traveling into the future, and then fear then whispers into your ear, here's the worst case scenario that's gonna happen. Here's how everything's gonna fall apart. Here's how you're not gonna be alive anymore. Here's how you're gonna lose everyone. Here's how you're gonna be betrayed. Here's how you're gonna be left without. And so we step into a future, and then it starts to lie to us and informs us that whatever situation you are in is dangerous, whether it's true or not, whether it's actual reality or not. And we allow that lie to then, about the future, to then determine what we see possible in terms of freedom here. So we're actually living in a future with a lie informing us of, hey, this is what is going to happen. Now, I'm not saying that that isn't gonna happen, it might. But here we are now, and it's informing us of what's possible with our freedom here and now. See, things start to go wonky at work, and the fear starts to say, oh, you're gonna fail, you are gonna be a failure. So today, now I'm like, well, I'm not even gonna try because this is what's coming. I need to protect myself here. Your marriage starts to get rocky, and it starts to tell you, oh no, things are gonna fall apart, don't trust them. They're dangerous. They're gonna probably leave you, and this behavior is probably just gonna continue until the end of time. So if this is what you want, feel free to step into it. So I keep my mouth closed here. I don't engage here. I don't step into the now. My finances start to unravel, and so I see my future saying, well, this is what's happening. You're gonna lose your house. Your kids are gonna be without food. You're gonna be left with nothing. And so I start to preserve everything that I have, now unwilling to actually step into a space of help. We find ourselves saying, look, the mess is just too big. It's too much for me. It's never gonna resolve. And so today I choose shame and I cover up rather than inviting others into this space to be with me in it. And that's why it feels like there's no choice. That's actually why it feels to us there is no choice in the matter, because all that we can do, all that we can see in front of us when fear is informing us about our future is what I need to do right now to protect myself. All other choices shrink in. And now, all I'm doing is trying to survive this life. All I'm trying to do is get through the next step. See, when we find ourselves allowing fear to inform us of our future, it is always, always, always a limiting proposition. And it is a losing outcome 100% of the time. See, like we talked about last week, it's actually possible to experience fear and to not be afraid.
That there's a difference between in a moment saying, yeah, I'm afraid right now, or I am experiencing fear, but I choose to not be afraid. That I choose to notice that that voice is there informing me about how awful the future is going to be, about how unsafe I am with my spouse or my kids or my circumstances that I find myself in. I get it. I get that that is a very big temptation to step into that future, but I'm unwilling to have that be my future, and so I'm going to choose something else. See, when we allow ourselves to be afraid, we allow the fear to overtake our being. But there is always a possibility to choose another voice, another truth, when we decide that we are not going to be afraid, but to recognize that there is fear in there. See, here's a crazy thing, and I say this over and over and over again, and I get that it's easier said than done, but you don't have to believe everything that you tell yourself. You actually don't. Everything that comes into your mind, you don't have to take it as capital T truth. When that voice comes and says, hey, your marriage is unsafe. Hey, your finances are unsafe. Hey, your future is going to turn out horrible. It's okay to say, that's a nice thought. Not going to believe that right now. I'm up for another future. And so I need to look at the choices that are actually available here and me now, here and now. And that's where God has room to then step in and say, thank you. I'll take it from here. And now we can actually see where I need to step my foot so that it can be taken. What choices do I have in front of me to step into that God says, this is the future that I have for you. This is the land that I have promised for you and for your ancestors. See, we oftentimes find ourselves saying all kinds of things about our finances, our kids, our marriage, our careers, our thoughts, our circumstances. But when God calls you into the promised land, he says, everything you touch will be yours. There is no need to be afraid. And by the way, this is why worship is so important. Because when we worship, it actually subjugates the fear to the truth. When we worship, and there's obviously all kinds of ways to worship. Come to a community group, you'll experience it. But the reason why we sing corporately, collectively, why that's so important is because for some of you, it's the only time of the week for just 35 minutes where you declare a truth other than the truth that is coming at you. For some of you, it's literally the only moment that you have your entire week that you start declaring God is always good. And the rest of the 167 hours of your week, all you're thinking is, I'm gonna lose it. Everything's falling apart. The world's crazy. This is never gonna heal itself. And this is why worship is so powerful, because it just subjugates everything to the truth of God so that it doesn't take you, so that you can know the truth, and then the truth will set you free. And I love that he doesn't just say, hey, do not be afraid. He says, do not be discouraged. Do not be discouraged. Look, fear is one thing right now, but the level of discouragement is like at astronomical peaks right now. The crazy thing, it's on every side of the aisle. It's like in every corner. Even people who are like, I'm getting what I want, they're like, I'm discouraged at the same time. And this is overtaking us. So I think it's fitting that God also said, do not be afraid, do not be discouraged. That word actually means, dis means to remove, courage means courage. And it actually says to remove courage from the situation. That's what discouragement means. When we are discouraged, we are literally looking at whatever circumstances that we are in and saying, well, I'm gonna remove courage from this circumstance. So now all I see is hopelessness. I'm gonna remove the courage to step in and do something. I'm gonna remove the courage to have the conversation. I'm gonna remove the courage to be who I know I'm called to be in Jesus. So now it's hopeless, because there's no more courage involved in this circumstance. There's no more courage in this relationship. There's no more courage in this space in my life. And this is why courage is a command, not a feeling. Why you can feel fear and not be afraid. Why you can feel discouraged and not be discouraged in the middle of this. See, when you choose to actually live in courage, rather than to have the fear inform you, to just say, all right, what courageous act is God calling me into right now? What courageous moment is God calling me into this? See, it actually shifts the entire atmosphere of your life and the life of others. And what it does is it unlocks all of the choices that God has placed in front of you.
See, when you're willing to step into courage in any circumstance and not say, I'm going to remove it, but I'm actually going to step into it with courage, all of a sudden God goes, great, let me show you all of the plans so that everywhere you put your foot, it's yours. So that you can step into this with confidence. You shift the spiritual environment that you live in. You shift the world that is around you. See, there is a huge difference between shrinking back, playing small, and hoping that circumstances might turn out. I find that that's where a lot of people are at right now. People are discouraged and they're afraid. And what they've done is they've said, you know, I'm just gonna shrink back. Because I'm afraid, and I don't really want to step into the mess because it feels too big and it feels too overwhelming. And the conversation now is like, well, I hope it turns out. I hope society shifts. I hope people experience equality. I hope that people find love. I hope that we can get along. I hope that the world can turn out the way that it is. And let me just tell you, there's not a lot of language around hope when Jesus and God step into the equation. It's always a command and a promise. There's a difference. Hope is like, maybe it will happen. Faith is the evidence that hope will happen. Faith is like, no, this is gonna happen because God himself has told me that this is what I am supposed to give my life to. It allows you to boldly enter into your promised land. The life that he's called you into and your community around you. So you have been commanded to be strong and courageous. It's not an option. It's not like a, hey, if you feel like it. Just think about, what is the promised land that you must take? What is the promise over your life and over your family's life? Over your community? And where have you been allowing fear to inform you of what's possible? Where have you been allowing fear to take you into a future that has not yet happened and told you all of the evil uglies, the horrible no goods? And you're like, yeah, I guess this is what's gonna happen. When God's saying, do not be discouraged, do not be afraid, because I will be with you wherever you go if you're willing to step your foot into the things I have called you to. And the only way to do this is an intimate connection with God, allowing his voice to inform you over all other voices, knowing without a shadow of a doubt that he has your back, that he is faithful. If that's not there, you have a lot to fear. It would make sense that fear would be the environment that you live in. But when you connect to him, it's his perfect love that drives out all fear. It's crazy because even the end, like when I talk to people and I'm like, what's the worst thing that can happen? And like, we'll just work it through, you know, like let's get to the worst case scenario. And inevitably we get to death. And it's like, oh cool, Jesus actually has that covered too. See, there's actually nowhere that you can go that he's not like, there's a promised land waiting on the other side if you're willing to step into this with me. And this is the life that God calls us into. Courageous, bold, fearless living. This week, when you find yourself overwhelmed by fear, when you find yourself overwhelmed by discouragement, I have a feeling, just an inkling, that in the next few months, things are gonna get way more chaotic. That when you find yourself afraid for the future, afraid of what might happen, afraid of your own life, your own finances, your own career, your own possibilities, that you would pause and say, thank you for this future fear. There's a bigger future. There's a promised land that God has called me into. That doesn't look a lot like the promised land. So I'm going to step into the life that Jesus has for me, to follow him and to take every step that he calls me into, to take the land that is in front of me. Let's pray. Jesus, right now, I just confess my own fear. God, not just in buildings that make weird noises,
but just in a living in a fog of where are you in the mess that our nation is in, that the world is in, that the church is in. I just confess my own level of discouragement in the middle of all of that. God, forgive me where I have been unwilling to step boldly into the courage and the future that you have. And I pray for every single person at home, God, that is living in a state of fear or discouragement or an unwillingness to step into the future that you've called for them. God, would you rise up within them now? May their eyes be open to the lies that fear has been speaking into them, and would your voice ring stronger? I just pray, God, even this week, that we would have just a burning voice inside of us that says, do not be discouraged, do not be afraid, because I will be with you wherever you go. But God, give us the courage to go, to speak, to move. Jesus, I thank you. And for those of you who are at home and maybe you're like, man, I don't know this Jesus. I'm not connected to him. Or maybe you're just recognizing that there is another Lord over your life, and it's fear. Today, the same invitation that Jesus had for so many people is for you. And that is to just follow him, to lay down all the other voices and allow his voice to inform yours. And it's just an opportunity to connect to him as your Lord, as the one who oversees your life, who speaks louder than any other voice. I want you just to pray this prayer with me. It's nothing big. And right now, even if you're watching on our YouTube channel or our Facebook, just type in right now, I'm choosing Jesus. Or if you're on our app, you can just click that button right now that says, I'm raising my hand to choose Jesus. Just pray this prayer with me. Dear Jesus, I give you my life. I know that I am broken. And I know that you came and you died for me and came back to life so that I could live. And I confess that you are Lord. Your voice is louder than any other voice. And I choose to live in freedom today. In Jesus' name, amen.
Hey, thanks for joining us on the Humanity Church podcast. We hope that this was a meaningful experience, and we look forward to connecting again next week for another conversation around what it looks like to live by faith, to be known by love, and to be a voice of hope. Again, for more information about Humanity Church, you can visit us online at humanitychurch.com. And if you want to support the ongoing work here at Humanity Church, including this podcast, you can give online in about 10 seconds by texting the word Humanity Church, one word, to 77977. Thanks, and have an amazing week.